Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. I had a rough week. I got caught up in that crazy Delta outage, and so I was trying to take a four-hour flight from Detroit to LA. It wound up being a 15-hour ordeal. I had a baby kicking my seat for 6 hours. This baby could easily be on the Brazilian Olympic soccer team, but no question about it, in terms of the leg strength and power. Landing in LA, I thought there were dead bodies in the terminal. That's not a joke. I really thought that people had sort of just lost it. It was Lord of the Flies when I got to the baggage claim. I mean, the claims were just spitting bags out haphazardly, no order whatsoever. They were spilling over onto people. I survived, and I get home and I read that one of the media shuttle buses has taken gunshots. And for the second straight week, I'm feeling terrible and sorry for myself about my horrible life. And then I just immediately feel so much worse for you. Are you okay? Are you okay?
I'm okay. The gunshots, I had actually been lulled into a false sense of security over the past few days. One of the things I've been telling other reporters as we like kind of bullshit and make small talk is like, hey, you know, like it's actually pretty safe down here. And I don't feel
cool
worried for my safety. And then right before I was sitting there waiting to go to the Croatia-Argentina game last night. And Ben Eagle, our Olympics producer down here, starts reading these tweets about gunshots. Thankfully, nobody was hurt. Thankfully, my mom is not on Twitter and was not really aware of the incident. But yeah, man, you never know. So I will say that I have had a lot more fun than I did over the first few days, and have found like a little bit of a rhythm down here. And it's like I feel like I'm safe. I feel like everything's all good. So I'm not going to overthink it too much. I'm going to put the Deodoro shooting out of my mind and take it from there.
Well, that's because you also have something else on your mind, and that's the trauma of losing a fight with a tree.
Yes. For anyone who missed it, I'm glad you caught that.
Oh, it was my favorite part. I'm referencing your first Olympics diary, right?
Yes.
Which was awesome, and everyone should read it.
Yeah, thank you. I had to come clean in the diary about 1:30 Friday afternoon. I was walking home and I was looking down at my phone like an idiot and ran face first into a tree. In the piece, there's a picture of the tree. It's at a 45 degree angle, and it's not just like I hit a tree branch, like it's a tree trunk. And yeah, it was pretty embarrassing. All around me, Brazilians started cracking up, and I deserved to be laughed at. I deserved to be robbed. And it really captured just how hopeless I was in those first few days walking around Brazil. But, you know, we're in a better spot now.
It reminded me of my most embarrassing moment of my adulthood. I was walking around my neighborhood just trying to get a little power walk in, and I got stuck behind a mom with one of those double strollers, and she was walking too slow on the sidewalk. And I was impatiently trying to get around her and failing. So I tried to do the big loop around her, caught my foot on a sprinkler head and just wiped out face first on the sidewalk right in front of her. And of course, what are you going to say at that point? I mean, she has to stop short so she doesn't run me over with the stroller. It was incredibly awkward. I thought I had wiped that memory out of my mind after all these years. And then it just came rushing back when I'm reading about you just sprawled on the sidewalk in Rio. I'm just thinking these guys are going to come out of dark sedans, grab your laptop bag from you and take off as you're laying there. But I'm glad you're okay. Did you pass the concussion protocol? That's the real question.
I honestly was walking away and was like, I think I might have a concussion. I was checking myself to see if I was bleeding. Thankfully, that would have been really bad if I had started the weekend with blood gushing from my face. That would have been pretty embarrassing to the SI colleagues here, like Alex Wolf, Tim Layden, some of the best sports writers of the last 20 years are just hanging out down here with us. And I would have been the one walking into the office with a cut open face. So we averted that disaster.
Well, thankfully you've rallied, because I think you've been doing some great writing down there. Now I'm really just blowing smoke up your butt. But I mean, has there been something that's been your favorite? Like, what's your number one thing that you've either seen or written about? I mean, it seems like you're all over the place.
So far, my favorite, I mean, for the diary thing, basically, I took the day off from basketball and bounced around Olympic Park, which is an hour away from my hotel, but has venues where there are basically sports and final rounds and medal rounds like all day. And so synchronized diving I loved, because that stuff is just incredible to watch. And it's also incredible to watch judges nitpick the synchronized diving, because I'll be sitting there like, holy shit, that was incredible. And then like the judges will come on and it's like a 7.8 and all the Canadians are depressed. But then in addition to that, fencing was super intense. But my favorite, I think, is beach volleyball, because number one, that's close to my hotel. And number two, it's the like prettiest venue in Rio. You basically are just like, there's a view of the entire shoreline on Copacabana Beach. And then at the same time, like beach volleyball is simple enough so that it's like mindless entertainment. I could watch it all day.
So going back to the fencing thing real quick, though, because you had an interview with a dad who was great, and it really reminded me that what a niche sport that is. So basically his daughter was one of the fencers, but you asked him about the rules for a different type of fencing. He had no freaking clue. Is that common, like even among the diehards who are at the games, like they don't really understand the rules?
I don't know. I think most of the parents are pretty diehard. And are pretty familiar with the politics of all these different sports and are very into it. And that's one of the reasons I loved the fencing dad so much, because he was just like, I'm going to level with you, man. Like my daughter does the other kind of fencing, and I have no idea how this one works.
I don't even know if she's my daughter. Yeah, no. Well, so that's what I was also wondering, though, is I imagine it's sort of like, you know, you go to an opera and there's like the super fan who's got like the personalized handkerchief just ready to cry at every single word of every song, like knows it all.
Yeah.
Do you have those people at these kinds of events too? Like the guy who flies from, I don't know, the middle of nowhere, Luxembourg, because fencing is his entire life, and he's like sitting courtside at the fencing match, like breaking into tears at these brilliant moves. Like, are there those kinds of fans too?
I haven't seen many. I mean,
literally no one likes fencing. That's what we've decided.
Well, no, first of all, we're going broader than fencing. Fencing, I was only there for 2 hours, so I don't want to comment or report anything. But like, that is one of my curiosities. It's like, what kind of fans come to the Olympics? Because this stuff is expensive, and it's hard to get around as a media person, and there are shuttles. I can't imagine if I was like a fan trying to navigate this on my own. But I will say that so far the best fans I've been with were the Argentinians last night for Croatia Argentina. The Argentinian fans were like,
for
basketball. I was there to support Mario and Dario, and the Argentinian guys were just going nuts. And it was like, it was 90-10 in terms of Argentinian Croatian fans. And the Argentinians were standing for most of the game and shouting fight songs for most of the game. I was sitting next to an Argentinian reporter, and she was like, I was like, is this the national anthem? And then I realized that the songs were all different, and everyone in the crowd knew every word to the song. It was pretty impressive.
Do you think the NBA could ever get to that level? Like, I know there's little super fan pockets in the stadiums where the fans, like, they'll try to get some rally cheers going, or they'll jump up and down a little bit. Or is there just too much money in the fan bases? Because, like, why wouldn't a fan base like the Warriors have something where they, you know, have like a real section, like three sections of fans where guys would just go nuts? Or even a team like the Cavaliers, maybe, where you just have like the rowdy fans, you know? Like, why is that not a basketball thing, like in the NBA? It seems like it could be.
That is a good question.
Like, people associate that with soccer, right? But here you're seeing firsthand evidence. It's not just a soccer thing. That can be a basketball thing. It can work. And like the Lithuanian fans are freaking nuts. They do it all game, every game, regardless.
Yeah.
Let's bring that. Let's import that. Can you bring that back with you?
I mean, it makes these games a lot more fun.
Bring it back.
So here's the thing, though. Like, I also enjoy NBA basketball because it's kind of like a sleepy sport. Like, if you go to Wizards games, nobody really feels any pressure to pay attention until, like, the fourth quarter. And I enjoy that, too. So, like, there are multiple ways to enhance the game experience. But, yeah, I definitely think Americans are too rich and too stuck up to have as much fun as the Argentinians were last night.
Very interesting. Well, so what's next on your agenda? Are you sick of USA basketball? I mean, I'm noticing we're 10 minutes in and you haven't really even mentioned these guys. I mean, are you over it?
I'm not, man. I mean, first, they're the biggest celebrities here. Last night, they met their own favorite celebrity. I talked to them like a week ago and I was asking him, like, you know, are you guys going to be able to see any other events? Who are you excited? Like, what other Olympians are you excited to meet? And to a man, they all said, or everyone, DeAndre Jordan said Usain Bolt, but everyone else said Michael Phelps. And at the time, I kind of thought that, like, that might be because Michael Phelps is the only Olympian they could name. But I will say, those guys seemed pretty fired up to meet Michael Phelps last night. So who knows?
Well, they were so fired up that they all took Instagram selfies. And then we got PR agencies emailing me links to their Instagram selfies. So it clearly was like a global phenomenon, these meet and greets.
That's a great 2016 moment there. Just like, we're not going to do any work. Here are Instagram links. Check it out.
Bingo. So are these guys going to get challenged? Like, I know they had kind of a blip in their second game a little bit. Anything that makes you think this is going to go any other way than what we thought? I mean, I guess one of the other takeaways is that Spain and France are really not what we thought.
Yeah, that's been a surprise early on. Like, before we talk America, Spain has looked crappy, right? And like, are you watching these games?
I am. I probably not as diligently as I should be. I had my cousin's wedding this past weekend, and then I survived Delta's pentathlon.
Right.
So I haven't seen every second of every game, but yeah, no, I'm following it, and I'm about to dig in here pretty deep as the rest of the tournament unfolds. But it does kind of seem like everybody else has been underwhelming, except for, I guess, maybe Australia, right?
Yeah, I mean, well, Australia, I wrote about today, those guys are really impressive. They're so much fun to watch. Like, the offense revolves around Delly and Andrew Bogut pick and rolls, and somehow it's not a disaster. And they just play, like, they've all sort of grown up together over the last 15 years. And, like, those dudes love each other, and it's a lot of fun to watch them play.
Yeah, so let's talk about your piece on Australia. So it seems like you view them and maybe Canada as sort of like the future of international basketball competition for the United States. Because, you know, when I look ahead like 4 years, like, our team's going to be stacked. Our, you know, as USA, is going to be stacked again, regardless. I mean, our select team this year could probably win a medal, you know, in these Olympics. So who is it that you see? I mean, is Australia sort of at the top of your list for competitors, given that Spain's falling off, Tony Parker's getting old, and he's kind of been the show for France? I mean, do you feel like we're headed for 4 years from now, USA versus Australia in the gold medal game?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to jinx anything. Like, I already feel guilty because doing this big reported piece before USA Australia tonight, it, like, virtually guarantees that the Aussies are going to go out and get drilled by 30. But there was another line in the piece where I was like, the next team, and I took it out, but I really think that the next team to beat America will be Australia, either Australia or Canada. And it'll probably take USA basketball switching up its selection process a little bit. Maybe they'll go 25 and under, but... But bottom line is, like, that's what's so interesting about this Australian team is that right now they have this, like, tight knit group that's probably overachieving a little bit. I mean, they're better than the sum of their parts, but at the same time, it like watching them now, I can't help but wonder like what they're going to look like with, once you add Ben Simmons to the mix, once you add Dante Exum to the mix, like Thon Maker, not huge on him, but like that's another athlete that they'll have. And like, basically over the last 10 years, they've started churning out talent, and it's them and Canada are the only two international countries that are really like growing at this point.
So on that Simmons thing, you were kind of talking about how they play through Bogut at the high post, sort of like the Warriors have in recent years. And you know, you went in some detail, you know, he's the best passing big man in sort of in the Olympics and one of the best in the game. And lots of different people were sort of vouching for how important he is there to their offense. And then you kind of had this sly, like, you know, sideways comment about how they could maybe play Ben Simmons in a similar role going forward. I mean, is that really how you see him being used and why? I mean, you know, because some people would say, well, he's just a point guard, really. I mean, he's a point forward, but you just put him at the top of the key. It seemed like you had kind of a different idea there.
Yeah. First of all, I like how this is turning into like an interview of me.
I'm asking you everything because I'm so into the Olympics. Like, yeah.
It's great. With the Simmons stuff, I mean, what do you think about Simmons? Like, I don't want to pigeonhole him too early. Like, we'll see how it shakes out. We'll see how the jumper looks. We'll see how the Sixers want to use him. But the more I think about him, I really feel like he's going to make a lot more sense in the high. If you try to put him in the high post and in the low post and run the offense through him there, like, because if he's closer to the rim, the jump shot stuff doesn't really matter as much. And then like, he's still just as deadly and is big enough to see over the defense. So like, I really would, there's a big movement to put him at point guard and just like hand him the keys to the offense. But I think he's going to be long-term better off if you put him closer to the rim and play him in the front court.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that that's mutually exclusive, right? Like, you can do a little bit of both. We saw the Sixers use him in that role a little bit as sort of, you know, the high screener during summer league, where he's getting the ball eventually kind of at the free throw line or free throw line extended, and now he's one dribble from the rim.
Yeah.
And he's really putting pressure on defenders, especially maybe who aren't as quick laterally. Like, once you have a big on him, you know, he can kind of take advantage of his speed. And that is a good way to cover up his shooting, like you're mentioning. I mean, it's fascinating. I'd love to see it. I mean, it's too bad he's not playing, for sure. That would have been one of probably the biggest takeaways we could have had from the entire Olympics basketball, is watching how that plays out in real time. But it's also amazing to think about 4 years from now. I mean, this kid, he's going to be what, you know, mid-20s or 23, 24 at that point. Like, he could be the toughest thing that the United States has seen in terms of an individual talent in a long, long time.
Yeah, it actually... I have not been that excited about Ben Simmons, but seeing how much the Australians love basketball, I'm now more invested in Simmons than ever before. I want him to turn into a superstar so that he can lead them at Tokyo.
I have a theory about that, though. I think it's because Dele is basically your favorite player. And I think that Dele riding shotgun for Ben Simmons is sort of like the remake of the LeBron Dele phenomenon in terms of the spot up shooting and the tough play, taking the bigger defensive assignment on the guard and so forth. I could just kind of see, you know, your eyes lighting up, maybe a single tear down your cheek as those guys are, you know, donning the yellow and green.
Dude, it's tricky with Dele because he's actually really good, or he has moments where he's really good. But every time he has one of those breakthrough plays, I keep expecting to find out that all of this was a fluke. And he just sort of keeps building on things. He's been great in the Olympics. I think he's had two 20-point games through the first two games. And he's just kind of flying around, wreaking havoc. He's had a couple plays where he has dove at guys' knees. And some of the foreign reporters are asking, like, every time you're around the Australian team, foreign reporters will ask what they think of Dele's dirty tactics. And they're all very diplomatic about it. But Dele walked out of an interview on one guy. But tense times in the mixed zone at the Olympics. But yeah, man, I like Delhi. The Australians are just so much fun to root for, whereas you have the Americans. I mean, it's like, it's a team that kind of leaves me cold, at least on the court. They're just boring.
Yeah, I mean, the highlight sort of from them has been them cheering for Michael Phelps during that race last night. Yeah. I really feel like that was the most exciting thing that we've seen. And I mean, is there anything that really has changed your mind if they're going to get pushed in this tournament or not, or no?
Well, I'm like, again, I don't want to jinx the Australians. I probably already have jinxed the Australians, but I think I'm excited for tonight. I think tonight will be a good test, a good barometer for the American team, because they really haven't played anybody who could even like knock down an open jump shot. And Team USA has taken on this sort of defensive reputation. But at the same time, they haven't played any competent competition. I mean, I guess you can count Argentina, but Australia is going to be a step up. And tonight we'll see, like, maybe they really are just that much better than everybody else. But I will probably look stupid on Friday, but when someone's listening to this and the Americans have won by 30, but I actually think tonight's going to be a good game.
Well, I don't think that makes you stupid, even if they blow them out. I mean, the talent disparity is still ridiculous. You know, yeah. I mean, as many NBA players as Australia has, I mean, they're basically starless, right? And their guys are sort of role players and almost cast offs of the best teams. Even guys like Bogut and Dellavedova were not deemed like must keep for the championship worthy teams. Whereas, you know, USA is loaded with guys who are centerpieces on 55 plus win teams. So, to me, it's not necessarily about the margin. It's just sort of the nature of the early part of the game, right? Like, if you're able to push the United States into the second half at this point, that's kind of a win, which means that we probably shouldn't even be talking about this.
Yeah, I'm sure. Exactly. I think they'll push them within 20 points. And beyond that, who knows what'll happen. It has been wild watching Andrew Bogut. Because, I mean, we watched him over the last 2 years. Like, he was kind of the weak link with the Warriors. Like, they were playing so fast, and he was the guy who was kind of, like, dragging himself up and down the court. Even though I realized, like, his defense was super valuable and his passing was valuable. But in Rio, he looks like Tyson Chandler. Like, he looks 5 years younger. He's flying around the court. He's finishing. Like, the Australian offense runs on Delhi and Bogut pick and rolls, and somehow that's not a disaster. It's been pretty fun to watch.
Okay, so let's take Australia out of it. If you could join any other country after sort of, you know, being part of the Olympic experience, whether it's their athletes or their media members, I mean, are you feeling a kinship with anyone else in this melting pot?
That's a good question.
Or are you taking it the other way, and are you really glad you're like Captain America? Because that can happen too, and that, there's no shame in that.
I'm not really Captain America. I like a lot all these other contingents that I've seen, even just among the foreign reporters. One foreign reporter I did not like was a guy from Serbia who sat down in Sports Illustrated in like our designated media seat at the basketball arena. Which is like, whatever, not a big deal. But then he disappears for 40 minutes and leaves his stuff there. So I'm kind of sitting there like, what the hell? Then he comes back and is just like reeking of cigarettes. It's to the point where I start to get a headache and have to move seats again. Anti shout out to my dude from Serbia. But I would say, if I could join anyone, I would join Croatia, because they have the illest jumpsuits in all of the Olympics.
Okay, that's a very good reason. I'm glad that very logical. Well, what else is going on down there? I mean, how's your day-to-day going? Like you said, it's going a little bit better, so presumably you found food?
Yes, we found food. There's absolutely no food in the Olympic village, like around any of the stadiums. The food is either non-existent or like not really edible. So it's a little bit of a challenge. I for most days, I go about 12 or 13 hours without eating. But that the flip side of that is that the meals I do have all taste amazing. So I've really turned the corner, and like the first few days before things got started last week were a little rough, but now I've started to have a little bit more fun down here.
God, this sounds awful. Like,
thank you for your honesty.
16 hours without food, and now you're trying to talk yourself in like you're eating sand at the beach, and this is so tasty because, you know, I haven't had anything since Tuesday.
Ben, I got to stay strong down here, all right? It's not time to start complaining. I'm still here for another 10 days. Like, I can't be too honest about the logistics down here. But I honestly, though, it, like, last night, the Croatia-Argentina game was so much fun that I didn't even care that it took me until, like, 2:30 to get home. It was all good.
Awesome.
Tell me about your life. What are you doing?
Well, I was going to say, since you've been gone, pretty sure that's a pop song, but the whole Westbrook thing happened and we never talked about it. Yes. And so obviously he signs the extension. So he pretty much saves Sam Presti's job or life, however you want to look at it, because otherwise that was headed for a trade. I mean, we kind of agreed on that, right? Like, they had to trade him if they didn't get an extension before the start of the season. Or did you not feel that way?
Yeah, I definitely, I mean, I think the way it sounds like it was basically Russ was going to say, I'm out, or I'm going to sign an extension. So he was going to let them know and say, like, I'm not going to stay, so trade me. Right. Is that what was reported?
Well, it sounded like, I'm not sure if it was that strong, but he was going to give them a clear idea of, like, look, you know, one way or the other, here's sort of what I'm thinking, yeah, you know, before the start of the season. So at least Presti had an idea, which to me, like, he didn't even necessarily need to do that. So he's already kind of doing them a favor, which says a lot. And I think he deserves credit for doing that. I mean, like, all he really had to do was say, I want to go and enjoy unrestricted free agency next summer. Like, that was his minimum that, you know, that was asked of him in that situation. He doesn't have to give them a heads up a year in advance. I mean, that's not really, you know, fair business even to expect a guy to do that. So for him to do that, I mean, he's doing Presti a big time favor. And then ultimately, I think it worked out really well money wise for him to be able to do it this summer. And so it kind of made sense for both parties. You're pretty excited that he's going to be there, though.
Oh, hell yeah. It's going to be great. I mean, like, the more we talked through Westbrook stuff, like, on the pod and off the pod, like, it just, there were no good options out there. And ultimately, him going back to OKC is as satisfying narrative-wise as Durant in Golden State was unsatisfying. So, like, I can't wait. It's good. I think it's good for the whole league to have him there.
Yeah. So I thought there was going to be some pretty good options for him next summer. Like, the Miami thing, I really like the idea of him and Blake Griffin going to Miami. I thought that could have been, you know, like, a real power, just given their age and just, you know, how much pressure they would put on defenses.
And, you know, Westbrook just in South Beach makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. And there were other ideas, but sort of the way the renegotiation played out, I mean, so he gets a big bump this year. He gets two more guaranteed years. So if there's some sort of a catastrophic injury, that's a win. But then I think the other big aspect of it was the whole, like, magical 10-year opt-out, you know, thing. And basically, if he had just gone into unrestricted free agency next summer, the biggest contract he could have signed was, you know, 5 years, $165 million. Obviously, that's a lot of money, right?
Right.
But if he gets to that 10-year, opts out, and then re-signs a 5-year deal with Oklahoma City, assuming that all the current rules stay the same, he'd be able to make up to 5 years and $204 million. So there's potentially an extra $40 million available to him on his next contract, in addition to, like, the $9 million roughly raise that he got this year, plus the max number that he's going to be able to get next year. So this was a very compelling financial offer that he accepted. And, you know, whether you buy into the narrative stuff or not, this was an excellent case of a guy where, okay, well, you lose your fellow co-star, but now you're able to really, really increase your earning potential. And, you know, those kinds of situations in the NBA don't happen very often. We just saw one with James Harden, you know, kind of similar, but other than that, it's almost unprecedented. So for him to be able to make, you know, $27 million bucks next season, it's kind of a no brainer, regardless of whether he wants to be in Oklahoma City or not. Like, you know, from a financial standpoint, he kind of had to do it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And the numbers that you're throwing around are just like so outrageous. We're going to get to a point where these guys are going to be able to start buying hockey teams. Like, this is just, like, $250 million is ridiculous. And I'm happy for Russ. And like, if you look at the value that they added, that guys like Russ and Durant added to OKC, like, those, they deserve it, because the franchises go up $200 and $300 million. So I'm not mad at the players, but it is, as a fan, just crazy to think about how big these numbers are getting.
So when you look at them going forward, I mean, a question people are asking me is, like, can they lure a second star there, sort of like the replacement for KD, or is that just a complete non-starter? And to me, I just don't see that being their approach.
We got to stop talking about Blake Griffin going back to Oklahoma City.
Thank you. I'm with you. Thank you. Preach. Please preach this.
You could not find a player less likely to leave a major media market. Like, Blake, the Knicks could maybe make sense for Blake, but otherwise, he loves L.A. Like, he is down at the Comedy Store. He's doing his thing. Like, I could not possibly imagine him going back to Oklahoma City, and the pairing with Westbrook would be kind of awkward. And so, yeah, I, like, take him off the table. And then beyond that, there aren't necessarily superstars available. I mean, unless they want to flip Steven Adams and pieces like Oladipo or whatever for Boogie. Like, I don't think Gordon Hayward is going to put a Russell Westbrook Thunder team over the top.
Yeah, and like, just even during the Presti era, how often has he ever been linked to interest in either signing or trading for like a star type player? Like, he's always going the smaller multiple asset route, flexibility route, you know, trying to get guys on rookie deals. Like, that's his whole philosophy. And so to somehow try to flip that backwards after doing something one way for like 8 straight years now, it just doesn't seem very logical. So yeah, I think the Blake Griffin Tinseltown to Boot Barn downgrade, I don't really see that. And I think this is more about, how do you build a team around Westbrook? Like, how do you find players that make his, you know, skills maximize their utility? And right now, I'm not sure that roster does it. You know, if he's trying to drive 1-on-5 and defenses don't have to respect Kyle Singler or Robertson or basically any of their other wings, and if, you know, they don't have a rock solid interior defense because they lose a guy like Ibaka and they lose Durant's length, and now it's, you know, a lot of pressure on Steven Adams to stay out of foul trouble and, you know, leaving Enes Kanter exposed in a lot of defensive matchups, I just don't think this roster makes great use of him. It reminds me a lot of the Rockets, you know, in terms of, you've got the one main guy and you're trying to juggle the pieces around him to try to make it work. And I think the Thunder are pretty clearly in juggling mode right now, where they're going to need basically the 2 guaranteed years of Westbrook's extension to kind of figure things out here a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, you know, now that you mention it, if they switched rosters, I think Harden would actually make a lot more sense next to the pieces that OKC has. And Russ would make sense next to some of the shooters that Morey has put in Houston. Is that crazy?
Well, that would be the greatest trade of all time. The internet would melt. Can you imagine?
Let's burn down the internet.
Harden for Westbrook, straight up. Who says no?
No, but can I confess something? The reason I am most excited about Russ and OKC is for all the stuff that you talked about in terms of, he's difficult to build around and he, you know, you need to get the right pieces and all this stuff. They're not that well positioned to actually make a run. Like, you know what? Like, the truth is, Russ is like not a perfect player. There are a lot of people who put him in the top 8 or 9 guys in the league, and like I just don't. I don't think he's on that level. And I think if he had gone somewhere else, it would have exposed his flaws more than highlighted what makes him great, and what's made him so much fun over the last few years. Like, if you put him in Boston, I still don't think he's good enough to put them over the top against the Cavs. If watching him in San Antonio would be a lot of fun just for the surrealism of it. But like Miami, I don't think he's good enough to make them a real contender. And I can't wait to see him in OKC, because this Russ is best as an idea, and like we're getting the like extreme of Russ as like the cult hero, where he's just going to be able to go nuts. He's full of spite and fury, and this is the best version of the Russell Westbrook experience. Whereas I think everybody else, every other situation might have felt like Allen Iverson on the Nuggets.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I'm just worried that the excitement from that's going to wear off if they can't guard anybody. And
it definitely will. Like, Russ's career was never going to end gracefully, though.
Yeah. I don't know. I just hate these stranded superstars, and now he's the latest stranded superstar. And
he's the best at being. He is so much more fun to watch as a stranded superstar than like James Harden or Boogie Cousins.
That is a great point. I mean, even like the Melo comparison, like Melo by himself is so depressing. Like Westbrook by himself, that's fine. Yeah, I mean,
it's good. The one thing I do hope is that they can get some shooters.
Yeah, they need shooting for sure. They need to figure out this interior defense thing too. And maybe they're going to hope that Sabonis comes along more quickly. But I think they're going to be, I personally think they're going to be worse than a lot of people think. It does kind of seem like once they brought Westbrook back, there was a sense that like, okay, hey, like they're still in the mix. And I believe that. Like, I think they're in the third tier for the West, you know, with teams like Houston or even a team like Portland where it's, you know, they got Lillard and they're, you know, have a pretty good balanced supporting cast around him, but it's sort of still his show a little bit. So maybe Portland's a little bit above where Oklahoma City is at this point. I don't think the Thunder are going to fall completely off the map, but I think they've got some really serious issues. And I don't know. Maybe I'm not just quite as excited as some people are to watch the Westbrook goes nuts show, because ultimately it was like unsuccessful. You know, when Durant and Ibaka were out with injuries that season, their defense was atrocious. The offense was really just him by himself. It didn't really feel like basketball. You know, it almost felt like kind of a novelty. And I just wonder if you're doing 82 games of that this year and, you know, you're looking at the prospect of 82 games of that next year. You know, at some point, the novelty is going to wear off for me.
Yeah, that's fair. I think it'll be a lot of fun this year. And then I think he'll get traded halfway through the second year. So
ooh.
Or maybe the summer. I don't know.
We buried the lead on this one.
No, I think we're going to have a lot of fun for the next 12 months and then we'll see what happens. Related, and to take it back, a little segue here, to take it back to international basketball. You know what really bums me out is that Victor Oladipo is not on the Magic. And like watching Hazonia with Croatia, there's a lot of talent there. And Oladipo feels like he was the perfect guard to pair him with. And it's just like, it really bums me out that Orlando has no idea what they're doing, and he's just stuck there. Hazonia is the ultimate stranded superstar.
Well, that's a scorching hot take. But look, I have good news for you. Rob Hennigan, he's basically the fertilizer. Like, he'll send talent everywhere, and it'll grow all over the league at various points. So you just need a little bit of patience. Like, he'll give up on Hazonia within, you know, probably 6 to 12 months. And then he will have an amazing breakout for some awesome team. So you should be channeling your energy and your frustration right now into picking the best landing spot for him.
Yeah, Hazonia is the closest thing I've ever seen to a European J.R. Smith. It's just like, he's so clearly the most talented player on Croatia, and yet he still doesn't start, which means the coach is just fed up with his shit and is trying to send a message every game. But even last night, the game, Argentina was up 20 points, and Hazonia like is just so explosive that he shot them back into it to where it was like a 4-point game toward the end. He's been pretty impressive.
Well, that's good. Any other standouts from the games you've seen, or just any other takeaways?
I would say the lowest point I've had in Rio was on the bus back Sunday night. And checking Twitter and seeing, I left at halftime of Croatia Spain, and checking Twitter and seeing that Dario Saric had a game winning block on Pau Gasol for Croatia to pull off the upset. That was one where like I spent a good 10 minutes kicking myself. I just I don't know, man. You never leave early. That's a rule. Like, you never know what's going to happen. And really, if you do leave early, you're pretty much guaranteeing that you're going to miss something awesome.
Yeah. I feel like we've argued about this, and I said very explicitly, you can never leave early. And you're like, nah, it's fine. You can leave early.
I know. And look what happens. This is, you're right. Okay?
Thank you. Thank you. God, I am dancing in my living room right now. People cannot see me, but I'm dapping or whatever that's called. I'm doing it all.
It's tough. Yeah, so I had to live with that for about 10 or 15 minutes before I got over it. And have you seen Saric at all?
Just briefly. You know, I really got to start digging into the Olympic basketball tournament. But yeah, no, I mean, it sounds like people are really excited. It sounds like he's got a really fun role with them.
Yeah.
So that's awesome. I mean, for the Sixers, like, now is the time to have hope spring eternal, because it's not going to work and you're going to be depressed by December. So, like, now is the time to really own it.
Yeah, I was in Vegas and we were talking to I was randomly out to dinner with a couple NBA people and a friend of a friend who was an ex-college player who has spent the last 5 years in, like, the highest EuroLeague. And somehow Saric's name came up, and this guy was like, that dude is good. And I was like, oh, all right, cool. And he was like, no, that dude can play. And, so we spent the next 5 minutes, like, just sort of talking about Saric's game and how he's, like, pretty fearless, pretty tough, and this is from an American who's over there, and he said he's going to be pretty good. And watching him here, like, his game is interesting because he's just so solid at everything. And if he can add a three, like a three-point shot, he will be very, very good for the Sixers. And if nothing else, that just highlights how important, like, three-point shooting is at this point, because I guess you could probably say that for, like, half the league if they can add a jumper. But his jumper is a lot further along than Ben Simmons, and I think he could be a lot of fun to watch with Simmons on the front line.
I was just gonna say, like, the Sixers need to hire, like, four shooting coaches, like,
kidnap that dude from San Antonio. What's his name?
Oh yeah, no, I know what you mean. I'm blanking on it. Chip England.
Yeah, Chip England. Kidnap Chip England, Sixers. That's like job number one. That's the new process.
Then clone him, and then you're set.
Yeah. Last question here. Back to Team USA. Who do you think on Team USA would be the best football player? We were discussing this in the office the other day.
Well, I did. Draymond Green was basically on Michigan State's football team. I'm not sure he actually played. I think he played in a spring game. You got to fact check me on that one.
So,
but
interesting.
I think basically he wins because he actually has legitimate, like, basically D1 experience.
Hold up. No. Someone else brought that up. And I'm glad you mentioned it, because Draymond Green technically did play in a spring game. But I read an interview, and now you can fact check me. I read an interview with a Michigan State football player who was like, yeah, Draymond was awful. He had no idea what he was doing. So I don't think Draymond is the correct answer. I don't
know. All right. All right. Who is it?
Did you see video of Clay and Jimmy Butler the other day?
No.
Oh, all right. So you missed it. That started this.
Oh, this is the football passing video.
Yeah, yeah. And Clay burned Jimmy Butler, and then at practice yesterday they were talking shit back and forth. And Jimmy apparently off camera was much better than Clay. And had, I think, like, three catches and a pick, and so he was pretty upset about the way the video was edited for the internet. But,
well, you know, when I did my story on Jimmy, he talked about playing football quite a bit growing up with his brothers and so forth. Yeah, no, he didn't, you know, he focused on basketball fairly early. But yeah, he, like, football was, like, his first love because he's from just outside Houston, Texas. It's all they do. He's a big football fan. You know, he goes to Broncos games. So he got a friend on the Broncos. So I think there's a legitimate passion. And he's got the skills for it, too. Like, I could see him out there running routes, the discipline.
Yeah.
So I hear what you're saying. But at the same time, like, I don't think we should snub our noses at Big Ten football. I mean, come on.
At what? At Draymond?
Yeah, I mean, come on.
I think the only, first of all, I think Jimmy is, he's got the right body for it, and he's just crazy enough to be able to do it. I don't think most of these other guys would really want to, like, mix it up, but I could see Jimmy Butler throwing himself around out there and getting really into it.
Okay, I got another one for you. What about Kyrie Irving as the option quarterback, who's like the most amazing player until he takes the first hit?
Yeah, I was gonna say Kyrie Irving is like the new RG3 if he goes out there. It would take about 3 weeks before his career was over. Kevin Durant, it would take about three quarters.
I got another one for you. What about DeAndre Jordan as like the designated punt blocker?
That would be awesome. I would love it if a team it like. I guess you can't do it in the pros because there's 53 roster spots, but I would love it if one of these college teams that has 85 spots on the roster just throws in, like Kentucky should do this with some of their recruits, throw in a designated punt blocker and just see what happens.
Okay. Can we see any of these other guys? I don't really see Melo necessarily.
Yeah. Melo is really doesn't quite have the intensity. LeBron, seriously, and I brought this up with Bill Barnwell a couple years ago, because he had written an article like debunking LeBron as a football player. Like, you will never convince me that LeBron could not maybe not now, but like 5 years ago, he definitely could have retired, trained for 18 months, and gone and played tight end. Maybe he wouldn't be a star, but.
No, I think he would be a star. I think those people are delusional. Like, I think LeBron is an athlete unparalleled, and I think he would be very successful.
Savants. And LeBron could be good at 25 different sports.
Well, there was a thing today about how long would it take him to become a very good handball player. And I think overnight, he's the best handball player in the world. I think he could be an elite soccer goalie. I mean, I just go right down the list. Okay, so what about Harrison Barnes?
he's got a body that could be a good receiver. Maybe he'd be a better football player than he is a basketball player. I haven't really interacted with Barnes very much, and I need to fix that. The one guy who I haven't dealt with Coach K any. As a Carolina fan, I just can't like cross over, but I need to say what's up to Barnes. Talk.
Okay. What about DeMarcus Cousins as like a pass rushing defensive end?
That's the other thing I was thinking about. Like, he's definitely too big, but if you threw him as like a defensive end or a defensive tackle, I mean, he's a big dude. Did you see the photo of him with Michael Phelps?
Oh yeah. He dwarfed him.
Yeah, he's like twice his size. So I mean, I don't know. All bets are off with Boogie.
So we've narrowed it down to Draymond, DeMarcus Cousins, and Jimmy Butler, I think.
Yeah, no, I think it's got to be Draymond or Jimmy Butler, because DeMarcus is a little bit too, he's like 6 inches too tall to where people would just be like coming at his knees and his ankles every play. But I would love to see him try.
What about DeRozan? DeRozan could be like a... I can see DeRozan as like an outside receiver where you just throw the fade to him.
Yeah, I don't know. It's possible. I think the big takeaway here, though, is that it's more fun to watch Team USA play other sports at the Olympics. And hopefully we get more of that over the next week or two.
Yeah, to play other sports and to watch other sports. It was awesome seeing them cheer for Phelps in the pool. I mean, they were just like standing out, which is great. So it's kind of cool when they do, you know, get off their luxury cruise line boat and they get out of the strip club or wherever they were caught accidentally visiting.
I still have to investigate the brothel.
Yeah, the brothel. That's right. Yeah. Well, you're getting married, so don't investigate the brothel.
I won't investigate too close. But all right, man. Oh, one other thing. I did look at the toilets after you inquired about their rotation last week. As best I can tell, it's the same rotation as the Northern Hemisphere.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I'm going to continue to investigate. I'm sorry.
Hold on. Are you sure you're in Rio?
Not. Honestly, no. I have no idea where I am at this point. I'm running ever on since about 4 hours of sleep and Red Bull. So.
And ever since you ran into that tree, it's just all been a blur.
Yeah, exactly. But yo, we will catch up either end of this week if something crazy happens or next week. Thank you for checking in. I really feel like we're setting a record with this podcast. Like, we're spanning a good 6,000 or 7,000 miles right now.
No, it is the Guinness Book of World Records for longest distance podcast.
Yeah, we're claiming it.
And not only that, but I really do feel like am I keeping you sane? It kind of feels like
a little bit. Yeah, you know, you're my lifeline, because I actually don't have a phone down here, I can't make phone calls. So my Skype calls to you are the only voice communication I've had with the States. So it's nice, man. Thanks for getting me through this.
No problem. You know, you haven't missed much back here. Delta melted down. We had one of our presidential candidates threaten the life of the other one. Other than that, everything's great.
Great summer. It's a great summer.
We'll see you when you're back.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Thanks for tuning in for another episode of Open Floor. You can follow Andrew Sharp at Andrew Sharp and Ben Golliver at Ben Golliver. And you can find the whole SI podcast network at si.com/podcasts. Please subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast app of choice. And please leave a review if you like what you hear.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.